Hello again. There's no regular episode this week, so here's another archive interview. This one comes from 2012 as well. It's with Lewis Baston, who's an author of books on the AV referendum and also wrote a very good biography of Tory politician Reginald Maudling. This is an interview about George Galloway's surprise victory in the Bradford West by-election in 2012. We start with Lewis talking about why the election was so significant. But first, some theme music.
Galloway managed to win this seat in a landslide victory with hardly any of the press corps or politicians in general noticing what was going on. It was one of the elections we've had where the result has come as a real surprise when the votes have been counted, and that's a rarity. It's also, of course, one of the by-elections that's had the biggest swing in recent history. There aren't many cases where you get a swing of more than 30 percentage points in a by-election. And it was also quite interesting for what it tells us about how political campaigning is done, and also about the politics of British Muslims, and in particular sort of British Pakistanis living in Bradford. But it would be a mistake to see it as a sort of Bradford-only or Muslim-only thing. I think there are sort of far wider lessons, and the report was trying to draw out some of those lessons.
We are talking about Muslim politics. You discuss in some detail the concept of, I think it's called Biraderi, excuse my pronunciation.
The Bradford pronunciation is something like Bradery.
Oh, Bradery, okay. I suppose that makes sense. Could you expand a little on what's meant by the term? And
Bradery is a system of sort of kinship, really. It means sort of fellowship or family. It's a little bit like a Scottish clan sort of system is probably a more sort of familiar example to some people. But it's about sort of collective loyalty. It tends to be run, as a lot of these sort of traditional institutions in any culture are run, by some of the most sort of traditional patriarchal small-c conservative power brokers within the community. And it's been a means for politics to sort of function in places like Bradford West. Political organisation, as in many places, has been in decline. Local politicians in particular, don't find many places where they can get large groups of votes. Now, what parties have done, and it's not just the Labour Party, though Labour were most embarrassed by Bradford, the other parties do it as well, is strike deals with local power brokers, the local sort of bosses, to deliver kind of their communities for their party candidate. And although it's very effective in the short term as a way of getting votes, in the long term it sort of atrophies political organisation in the constituency. In the long term, though, reliance on the sort of block votes delivered by Bradery means that local parties sort of stop fulfilling their functions of being a kind of campaigning party, of being a place where you come and discuss political ideas, and indeed it sort of subverts the idea of meritocracy.
Well, yeah, I thought one of the most shocking things actually when I read the report was about Labour's stakeboarding of houses. Could you perhaps briefly just describe what was meant by stakeboarding?
Bradford West, a lot of Bradford West, particularly the kind of inner city heartlands of it, they're terraced houses with small front gardens. Now, what would happen is that the Labour organisation from last time, last general election, would have sort of board saying sort of vote Labour on a stake you can put in someone's front garden. And what the practice in Bradford has been is that if somebody promised last time, you can sort of go and sort of put a board outside their house without asking them again. rather cheekily in the report, I say you don't need consent for an extra insertion. But this seems a kind of real metaphor for people taking the voters for granted. To me, it was quite interesting that somebody who is a kind of national and international figure like Galloway was able, actually, to tell a story about local events that resonated with people.
Well, quite. I mean, how much of that do you think is down to the type of the Respect campaign? Because you talk about it being chaotically democratic, a bit like, say, the Occupy movement and those sorts of protests with participatory democracy.
There was something of a kind of, in physics, a cloud chamber. You've got a sort of subatomic particle that comes whizzing through the cloud chamber, and a sort of streak of kind of coalesces around it. So it's evident. In a sense, that's what Galloway did in Bradford. He comes sort of shooting in, and the forces that are kind of there, kind of latent in the politics of the area, sort of coalesce around him. It was an extraordinary, intense kind of campaign, according to the people who were part of it. There wasn't any kind of central blueprint imposed by the party. What this was, it was an expression, again, a bit like Occupy, some very political people whose kind of political ideas and political energy had not been channeled in mainstream politics. There was something kind of very liberating, I think, to a lot of people about the Respect campaign, which politics in Bradford in particular and Britain in general haven't really had.
I thought what was most interesting actually about particularly the personality of Galloway is, whereas I suppose quite a lot of people would perhaps know Galloway best for pretending to be a cat on Celebrity Big Brother, the people of the especially young Muslim voters of Bradford West knew Galloway, as you say, from his Senate committee appearance or from his appearances on TalkSport or Press TV. So he was seen as, as you say, a commentator on international affairs, rather than, I suspect, in a lot of circles, exactly, he's just seen as a bit of a joke.
Exactly, yes. He had this position as a commentator, as you say, a commentator on international affairs, somebody who speaks very interesting, is very, very interestingly, is very quick-witted.
One of the things you argue is that one of the main turning points of the election was the TV debate.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could perhaps explain why, and that relationship between the old media and the new media.
New media kind of amplified the effect of old media events. If in a constituency 20 years ago you'd had a by-election and you'd had a debate from involving the candidates, and one of the candidates had done very well, the impact would be very limited. What new media, what social media in particular, enabled Galloway to do was really kind of build on his good performance in the televised debate. Instead of a Respect supporter saying to their friend, "Oh, did you see Galloway last on Sunday on the debate? He was really good." You could say, "Go and watch Galloway on iPlayer or on YouTube." So it was able to sort of amplify and reverberate the effect of this debate around the constituency in a way that simply wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago.
One of the things that you argue in the report is that the Bradford West by-election is perhaps an argument for parties to be a little bit more ideological. Could you maybe perhaps talk a little bit about what you meant by that for us?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having some political ideas in a political party. A lot of the time, political parties in their local meetings, local organisation, get sort of obsessed with sort of municipal issues. Parties exist, or should exist, in my opinion, to promote political ideas. In the 70s and 80s, you had a kind of an excess of activism and discussion taking place with when the militant, for instance, were trying to take places over. Mm. Now I think you've got a bit too little of it. And the parties have got quite fuzzy boundaries, particularly when they're dealing with sort of local power brokers. And a Labour person put this very eloquently to me in Bradford. If you've got somebody who runs a small business, moans about health and safety legislation, tries to weasel out of paying the minimum wage, then that's not really compatible with Labour values. Let him go and find another party. So I think while New Labour was very good at sort of defending its left flank against infiltrators who had ideologies like sort of Trotskyism or whatever. It was fairly bad, its non-ideological style of doing party organisation meant that it was very susceptible to kind of local decay of the sort that occurred in Bradford West.
One of the things you also argue is that changing the electoral system could improve local government. I mean, could you perhaps explain why you think that's the case?
The local electoral system, I thought, was a part of the problem in Bradford. They have single-member first-past-the-post most of the time for local elections. What that tends to mean is that the largest single element of the community locally, both in terms of party and indeed of sort of ethnicity, is dominating council representation. That there are only 2 out of 30 wards in Bradford where there is a mix of ethnicities of its council delegation. And this doesn't reflect the demographic realities. I mean, there are no all-white or all-Asian wards in Bradford. Everywhere is mixed to some extent. Mm. But first past the post means that the sort of diversity at Bradford, not only in party politics, but also in sort of representing all the communities who are living in a ward, doesn't really get represented. And I think there's also a sense in which, although I'm sure power broking can take place in reformed electoral systems, I mean, you only have to look at Ireland to see that it is possible, a bit more open competition would probably stop parties descending into the kind of moribund status that local politics reached in Bradford West.
Okay, fantastic. Lewis Baston, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. On our website, which is notenoughchampagne.libsyn.com, you can find links to the report that Lewis Baston wrote for the Joseph Rowntree Foundation on the Bradford earthquake. You can also listen to our back catalogue of episodes on the Brexit referendum, and also listen to the interview with Chris Mullin that I did last week. If you listen to after the final theme music, there's a trailer for our new series in September, and we'll be back with another archive episode next week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Try and solve problems by talking about stuff.
Corey, no. That's never helped. That's a terrible trailer. People have never solved anything on the world by talking about it online.
What about momentum?
No.
What?
You've got a couple more ideas. Just roll with them. Let's try and use that.
Okay.
What the world needs now is straight white men fixing the world's problems.
No, just no. Look. Let me handle this. Okay.
Go on. Fine.
Okay. You're listening to Not Enough Champagne, a political podcast about pluralism and progressiveness and general moderation. This is a trailer for season 2, which is going to be on the theme of taking back control.
What the world needs now is
no
reasonableness.
Quiet. No movie trailer voice.
Okay.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks with a whole host of new podcasts on a variety of topics. As I said, all about taking back control. Until then, I'm Steve Haynes. My partner in propaganda is Corey Hazelhurst. We will see you then.
See you in September.